Okay, to discuss the couple of weeks that were for Irish boxing, we're joined by our good friend Kevin Byrne of the Irish Sun. Kevin, I don't think any of us in our wildest dreams would have imagined Ireland coming home without a medal from these Olympics.
Hi, guys. I guess considering the quality in the team that went out, it was inconceivable that they wouldn't win a single medal. I remember doing a radio spot in 2012, and I think I might have been having a bad day, and I pessimistically predicted that we wouldn't win a medal, just because I think I might have been just feeling, you know, luck might be against us, and for all the bankers we have, you know, in the Olympics, it's just so hard to win and get to the medal stages. But this time, considering the draw, considering the buys that half the members of the team had got, and the way the draws looked, there were definitely appearing to be medals in this team. But from the day dot, everything fell apart for them.
It did. And instead of talking about, you know, highlight in a week of highlights, we're talking about what was the worst moment in a string of just bad fortune, just disaster.
I guess the two bits, the three or four major lowlights that I can take from it, and not having been in Rio now myself, you know, I'm watching at home with everybody else and just having conversations with people on the street and your family, and because they're all asking me, you know, boxing, what's going wrong? And it's very difficult to put a finger on it. And I'm trying to tell people, no, there's quality in this team. Everything's going to be all right. But as things kept going, it just didn't appear to be the case. Like the first major one, Michael O'Reilly failing the drugs test on the day of the draw. We're all looking, watching the updates. All the Irish journalists are updating from the venue, and they're saying, you know, Michael Conlon will fight X, Paddy Barnes will fight X. And then there wasn't a word from anyone, because the Irish Examiner there and then announced that Michael O'Reilly had failed the dope test. So all the Irish journalists in the venue ran elsewhere to kind of try and find out what the hell's going on, get an instant reaction off the coaches. And just before the thing even began, there was a major pop in the balloon. And I think the O'Reilly affair is having major consequences upon the thing as well. The next lowlight, I suppose, is, you know, Paddy Barnes. That was a terrible one, but I'll talk about Joe Ward. I think he had a ref who wasn't able to deal with his fight. Joe wasn't at his best. He had an excellent first round against the Ecuadorian, but rounds two and three were awful scrappy. I felt one of them was unfairly penalised twice, where the other guy wasn't. And all of a sudden, Joe, looking to become a light heavyweight gold medalist, as Muhammad Ali was, he was out. And yes, he definitely didn't perform to his best, and he didn't impose his fight on his opponent, but I feel he wasn't done any favours by the referee. Next major lowlight was, you know, because other guys came and went at this stage, but Katie Taylor's interview after being eliminated, yeah. She thought she won the fight. The IBA and her coaches thought she won the fight. Back home, maybe there was a bit more tempered reaction, because we knew she wasn't at her best as well. But just her interview, break your heart, watching her just at her lowest, and a microphone shoved in her face. And that's the nature of these things. You have to kind of do it, but it's tough. And then Michael Conlon's. Michael Conlon's was straight from the Gubu file. Like, there was, because the previous night, the Russian in the heavyweight final had got an absolute gift of a decision against the Kazakhstan boxer. And you're getting texts off people who never texted you about boxing before in their lives. They're kind of going, are you watching this? This is insane. And then the following day, you're thinking, they won't have the gall to do with the Conlon. And three rounds later, they most certainly did. And it's difficult to get your head around everything that's gone on out there this week and last week as well.
Yeah, the Conlon one is interesting, because I watched that fight and I said, there's no way Conlon loses this, and he does, and we're all shocked. I watched it back without sound to see if I could watch it kind of without being influenced by the commentary and stuff like that, to see if you can make a case for the Russian. I still don't think you could. I mean, like, that was as blatant a robbery as you could ever see.
It was terrible. Like, he was told by his father beforehand, because they didn't want to give allegations to Michael about, look, because apparently Zora Antia, Eddie Bulger and John Conlon, the Irish coaching team, had been told by members of the Russian gang that Michael's not going to win, and that's just the way it is. This is nearly sewn up. And to be honest, I don't think the Russian boxers or their trainers themselves are in on this. Like, I don't think if there is some sort of grand conspiracy, I don't think it's the Russians themselves, because at the start they had a couple of notable losses. The coach came out and slammed them, said, we are tourists. My boxers are not performing. We're behaving like head in the clouds tourists. And then after the Russian heavyweight loss to the Kazakhstan boxer, the coach came out then and said, the wrong guy won. You know, he said, what can we do? You know, there's nothing we can do about this. I'm happy for my guy to win, but the wrong guy won. So, like, Michael looked like he was just up against the wall from the get-go. When he lost that first round after boxing pretty well in the first round, kind of on the back foot, letting the aggressor come to him, pinging him off and, you know, ducking underneath the Russian's punches and landing again. Mm. I know it was an even enough round when you read back the CompuBox stats, but that doesn't tell you the whole story at all. Michael kind of behaved like the matador with the bull in that first round. And when he lost it, the fact that he had to change his tactics and won his second round, I wasn't convinced at all. And I remember we're waiting for the hands to get raised in the office, and obviously the third round being a bit closer, and he got caught with some silly shots as well. The writing was on the wall. But when it did happen, and Michael's pretty brave and passionate interview afterwards as well, they're effing cheats on live on the TV. It kind of opened up your eyes to, like, what the hell is going on over here?
And then, Kevin, sorry to interrupt you, but then insult to injury when Nikitin didn't even progress in the semi-finals and compete.
Like Nikitin carried an injury into the fight with Michael. He had, I think, a staple in his head, and maybe the lack of head guards in this year in the Olympics for the first time since the early 80s didn't help his cause. But Michael targeted his injuries, opened them up. He was a mess of blood. Another thing that happened is the referee was stopping Michael in his fight to clean blood off him. Like, what was she doing that for? Michael wasn't cut. All these boxers that go through vigorous medicals, it's not as if she has to worry about he's going to catch a disease, you know, because all these boxers need to pass rigorous medicals for all sorts of viral infections. So an opponent's blood on you is of absolutely no concern to you, but yet she's cleaning Michael off for 30 seconds before she gives attention to the Russian boxer as well. It was absolutely farcical. But it happened, and it's happened in broad daylight with the eyes of the world on him. The gall, the gumption of them, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I just thought she was doing that to give the Russian a breather, to be perfectly honest with you, because he looked like he was out on his feet.
100%. Yeah, absolutely, he looked like that.
Yeah, it was.
I know you watch back on on mute, which is pretty much the best way to do it, to find out, have I been swayed by the commentators? Mm. I remember Darren O'Neill saying at one stage, I think in the third round, he's blowing here, Hugh. He's blowing the Russian. Like, Darren is well able to read the fight, and he could see that Conlon's pressure was starting to take its toll on the Russian. 10 seconds later, the Russian got about a minute off. And if they're trying to justify scoring these fights from a professional standpoint and trying to say, oh, well, he was more aggressive, he came forward more, you boxed more of an amateur style, and if that's their justification for scoring these fights, why then, when you hurt an opponent and do damage to an opponent, do they treat him like it's amateur boxing and give him a minute off to tend to his wounds? If it's professional boxing and you've got the shot available and you're going in for the kill, let it happen. If that's the way they want to play it, play it. But instead, they were trying to take from two cups at the same time. Mm. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt and all the time of day to respond. And I'm even getting angry thinking about it. It's really an irritating fight to think about.
It really is, yeah. Just looking at the whole Irish performance as a whole, Kevin, when Billy Walsh left for the States, there was a couple of comments suggesting that, oh, he won't be missed too much because Zor is the man behind the man, so to speak, and Zor's still there, yada, yada, yada. But it's looking increasingly like Billy was the man, and like leaving go was quite foolish of Irish boxing.
He's certainly missed. He's certainly missed in there. And even though I'm in contact with a lot of the boxers and they tell me to the contrary, it's becoming apparent that, you know, the team they had works. The team they had worked, and breaking it up was just unfortunate. Now, like Fergal Crute said on the television, the CEO of the IBA, he said, you know, we talked to the boxers, we talked to the coaches after Billy departed. Did they want to bring in an outsider? Did they want to, you know, restructure the team? And everybody was against that. So I think once Billy left for the USA, they tried to do what was best, but the whole thing seemed to be undermined along the way. It was foolish to let Billy Walsh go, and there should have been something sorted. But from the way I viewed the incident at the time when Billy did leave, and I know Billy, Sport Ireland said, we'll pay Billy's wages. You know, Billy's getting bumped up from like 77 grand to 110 or whatever it was, and it wasn't as much as he's being offered in the USA, but Billy said, I want to stay in Ireland, and, you know, the new contract, the pay rise will do me. I'll be happy with that. I think what people haven't considered is that would have forced that everybody in the entire camp would have been unhappy with that. Like Billy's team, his coaches, even his boxers, would have been unhappy with that. Well, why is he getting this money when we want more now as well? Mm. And I just recall at the time, Sport Ireland kind of didn't really address that concern. Like, if Zora Antia is credited by the boxers themselves as being, you know, the genius, and Billy's a tremendous manager, but Zora is the genius who brought them to the next level, well, then surely, you know, he should be brought along on a similar pay grade. But there didn't look to be that kind of desire there from the paymasters to kind of say, look, we want to keep this team together. We'll pay for everyone. There seemed to be a preference. We'll give Billy the extra money. Now, I might be completely wrong, but that appeared to be the IEBA's justification for saying, no, we'll allow Billy to move on if that's the case then, because we can't afford to pay Zora Antia the extra money, you know, Eddie Butler the extra money. Paddy Barnes would have been knocking down the door. I'm on 40,000 from the Sport Ireland, but I train every day. He's only a coach. I want 50. And various knock-on effects down throughout the team. So I think they made their decision possibly in some sort of good faith, but I'm not saying they made the decision in good faith and they thought everything would be fine. Mm. But to lose the man who made everything tick behind the scenes, maybe the head disciplinarian, to lose him in an Olympic year with no major tournaments for the men's coming up in order to adjust, because Billy obviously left after the last World Championships. There wasn't even like an EU Championships or, you know, a Europeans or a Worlds. Just one to bed in the new system before it comes to the major one, the Olympics, the one that, let's face it, anyone cares about on the street. That it was just too much of an adjustment. But everything went wrong for this team from the start as well. And obviously Billy's success with the USA has just thrown more fuel on the fire for that one.
And finally from me, Kevin, even if I can just ask you briefly about, all right, we've discussed all the lowlights in Irish boxing this week, and I suppose all this business with Pat Hickey as well is kind of overshadowing our internal struggles in terms of Michael O'Reilly and that doping test. But what sort of damage has this done to Irish boxing in the last week plus, in terms of how we move forward?
Well, public apathy in the last 4 years after Rio was kind of there. You know, they haven't really been able to attract massive crowds to the national stadium, despite the fact that on any given night you can watch world European medalists in action, you know, representing their country against the best in the world. Like the send-offs for the team even before Rio were paltry attendance, basically family members, club mates, a few sections of the media, but they really didn't get the numbers in. And this was a team on the crest of a wave. So now the next 4 years are looking like, but there's a lot of public confidence being dented in. A, scoring of worldwide boxing. People are just thinking, this whole thing's a farce. What's the point in watching or getting behind it? And B, maybe those Irish boxers aren't quite all that they were. And that's just a public perception as well. So I think in terms of getting people through the gate and growing the sport, which is what they want to do, they want to be filling the national stadium so that they do have money there to kind of pay the coaches. And they'll be able to go in on partnerships with Sport Ireland and say, we can pay, you know, for this coach and we can do this. And just the development of the game in Ireland, I think it'll have taken a hit, hopefully not too much. Also, at political level, I think in the IABA, there's possibly going to be a lot of grassroots disaffectment as well with the current status quo that are there. And like Pat Ryan being the president of the association, but also Michael O'Reilly's coach, I think he's going to come under pressure now for his role in the whole affair. What did he know? What did he say? What was he saying? And those are questions that are probably going to be asked in the next few weeks as well by concerned parties.
All right, Kevin. It doesn't make for a good discussion in terms of what it'll do to how you feel afterwards. But look, it's been. Thank you for your contribution this evening on the Big Red Bench.
One other thing as well, Lisa. Like, this entire team is probably going to break up now of the eight who went to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Who's going to be staying for the Tokyo project? Hmm. Possibly Joe Ward and Brendan Irvine from the eight. This is the greatest team we've ever sent to an Olympics, probably, in terms of achievements in the past and stuff. Now, there is a good generation of new fighters coming through and they'll have to be blooded, but members of the coaching staff could leave now and most of the team will be broken up. So it's more pessimism, but there's still talent there. So hopefully we'll see a rebirth in the next couple of years.
Yeah, certainly the end of an era. Kevin Byrne of the Irish Sun, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thanks, guys.